I know your bulletin says this is a dramatic reading, but it's just me. I'll do my best. Just before the Passover feast, Jesus knew that the time had come to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his dear companions, he continued to love them right to the end. It was supper time. The devil by now had Judas, son of Simon the Iscariot, firmly in his grip, all set for the betrayal. Jesus knew that the Father had put him in complete charge of everything, and Jesus knew that he came from God and was on his way back to God. So he got up from the supper table and set aside his outer robe and put on an apron. And then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the feet of the disciples, drying them with his apron. When he got to Simon Peter, Peter said, "Teacher, you're going to wash my feet?" And Jesus answered, "You don't understand what I'm doing right now, but it will be clear enough later on." But Peter persisted, "You are not going to wash my feet, ever." Jesus said, "If I don't wash your feet, you cannot be part of what I'm doing." And then Peter said, "Oh, teacher, then not only my feet wash my hands and my head, wash all of me." Jesus said, "If you've had a bath in the morning, you only need your feet washed now and you're clean from head to toe. My concern, you understand, is holiness, not hygiene. So now you're clean, but not every one of you." Jesus knew who was betraying him, and that's why he said, "Not every one of you." After he finished washing their feet, he took his robe, put it back on, and went back to his place at the table. And then he said to all of them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and master, and rightly so, that is what I am. So if I, the master and teacher, washed your feet, you must now wash each other's feet. I've laid down a pattern for you. What I've done, you go and do. I'm only pointing out the obvious. A servant is not ranked above the master. An employee does not give orders to the employer. If you understand what I'm telling you, then act like it and live a blessed life." This is the story of Jesus. Thanks be to God. Sometimes you know that you're in really deep time. You feel everything shift in the atoms of your body. Your attention settles into the scene in which you find yourself. It's so old and ancient that it feels brand new. I felt that way getting news of my new baby niece born this morning. I could almost smell her just looking at pictures on my phone. Hearing your laughter and joy in the fellowship hall before worship tonight reminded me of all the times I've heard resurrection at a funeral lunch in that space. This weekend, I had one of those deep time moments that sends a shudder through my whole body. One of the poems that I published in one of my books was used as lyrics in a new choral anthem that was commissioned by the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And the person it was commissioned for asked for this poem to be used because it was meaningful to him when his wife died about a year and a half ago. He read it, somebody had handwritten it in a sympathy card to him, and he read it every day for about 200 days before this university that he is a donor to asked if they could commission an anthem in his honor and his wife's memory, and if there were any lyrics that might be stirring in him. And he asked me to come up and hear it perform for the first time on Sunday afternoon. Fairbanks seems like a long way to go for a concert, but I am married to someone who is almost as in love with Alaska as he is in love with me. And he invited himself along before he even knew where we were going or why. And so on Sunday, I was sitting next to the composer who I finally got to meet in person, And I was hearing stories from all of these students who have been practicing this anthem. They've spent more time with these words than I have, about how it's evoked all kinds of grief and loss and remembrance and healing and mending in their bodies while they'd been practicing for that night. And then the person it was commissioned in honor of invited us back to his parents' homestead for dinner. And so we drove up these winding, icy roads to the riverbanks of Fairbanks, high above the city, and found this skinny A-frame cabin that was built by the family over the course of 3 years, a 49-foot-tall fireplace, spiral staircases that the 89-year-old grandparents still take on the regular. I knew enough from the looks of children and grandchildren that there is a conversation about that happening, and they're not where they'd like to be. It was like we were in a treehouse. And then a table that probably should seat six packed about 15 of us in tight around prime rib and jello salad and pieces of pineapple with little Alaska state flags in them and baked beans with more bacon than beans. And I realized it had been a really long time since I sat squished up against new friends, people I didn't know until just now, at a table, breaking bread together. I realized I was there because they had lost someone they loved. And it was an honor. It was deep, deep time. And then the matriarch came out with a tray of au jus cups. And she said, "Now this is the special au jus from Marshall, Minnesota. So no wasting. I'll refreeze it all." And I said, "Marshall, Minnesota? My people are from Cottonwood." And she could hardly put the tray down before she grabbed my shoulders and she said, "What do you mean my people are from Cottonwood?" And we realized we both know Trudy and Broer, and we'd spent time in the same kitchens once upon a time before we found ourselves together in this one. It was humbling to remember what it feels like to be such a guest that the only thing you can do is make sure everything makes its way around the table and listen to all of the stories and gobble up what they have to share. It felt so old and ancient and brand new after 2 years of spending meals differently. Maybe you can relate. Maybe you found yourself in a scene recently that feels so old and ancient and also brand new. That's the shift that we're making tonight. We just heard two stories about how our human story can fall into really deep time over and over and over again because God's love keeps making a way where there was not a way. Because our best attempts at liberation cannot compare to the freedom and life that God desires for humankind and the whole entire cosmos. First, from our long-distance friend Beth, we heard a story about blood. God told Moses and Aaron that this is the first of the month in your new calendar. We're going to be starting something brand new together. They would have days to prep and then one lamb per household, but get creative and inclusive and don't waste anything. Keep the lamb for a few days, make sure everyone is tended to, and then prepare the lambs together. At twilight, take the blood and mark your doorposts and feast as a community in a really specific way, so that the sacrifice becomes you, all of it. It nourishes you, and you burn the rest as offering. There are no leftovers, nothing to put back in the Fairbanks freezer. Eat what you need and then gird your loins. Remember how your ancestors were ready to leave everything behind. Remember that none of this is permanent, so hold it all lightly with presence and gratitude. You are people of the one true God who satisfies you with everything you need to get up and go. You are people of salvation. And you will keep doing this every single year. This is a new calendar in which the first word and the first festival are salvation. And this story will live on to be your lifeblood, your body's river that carries your breath. I want you to practice it when you gather, and in the time that you keep, and in your methods for cooking, and everything you consume, and the stories you tell one another, and who you include at your table, and how you will teach your children about belonging and freedom and dignity and love and salvation. It will sink all the way into your skin. It will vibrate in your voice when you speak. It will fill your bellies and flow through your veins and become tangled up with your spiritual and physical DNA for generations to come. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron and to all the people of Israel, "Do this and remember me." The less than dramatic reading you heard is a story about a body. John's gospel has been focusing on the divinity of Jesus, narrating all of his quiet wisdom, always circling back to his connection with the Father. While he abides on earth with us, he also abides with God in heaven and has since the very beginning of time. In John's gospel, we hear about a Jesus who knows things. He knows that his hour has come. He knows that he will leave this world. He knows that he will go to the Father. He knows that he has loved his own in this world until the very end, all the way through. He knows that God has given all things into his hands. He knows that Judas will betray him and Peter will deny him. And he knows that they do not get it, at least not yet. And maybe they never will. But lucky for them and for all of us, their understanding is not a requirement for what he is about to do in the name of love. Jesus, having shared a meal with his friends and followers, gets up from the table and changes his clothing so he can wash their feet like a servant. He says, "Do this and have a share with me. When you do this, you remember me. Wash each other's feet. Interrupt the systems that are ranking some people above other people. Flip the rituals that build walls between. Take down the icons that claim God's love can only look a certain way." Many Christian communities do not practice the ritual of washing feet on Holy Thursday because it's too intimate and too vulnerable and too uncomfortable to kneel and smell and touch and wash, to sit and wait and be treated with such unfamiliar and public tenderness. There is a beacon that goes out by text among my female clergy friends. A reminder every Monday, Thursday, do not wear tights or pantyhose today. But tonight, we disrupt the rhythm of our liturgy and our worship by remembering this faith and this life is about girding our loins and holding everything really lightly. It's about approaching the throne of God with empty hands and daring believe that when we show up as our true selves, we are enough and already lovable. Tonight we remember that this faith, when we practice it together, sinks all the way into our skin, and it vibrates in our voices, and it fills our bellies, and it flows through our veins, and it becomes tangled up with our spiritual and physical DNA for generations. You see, thousands of years later, we know what Jesus knew. We are mortals who are born of heaven, and we will return to heaven. We are people knit together by the love of God, which is stronger than anything that we can build or cling to here. And even though we betray and deny and feel shame and misunderstand, these things are not barriers to the salvation that comes. We cannot forsake Jesus into changing his mind about us. And knowing this, knowing all of this, invites us into a truer love of ourselves, a new vision of our own bodies and lives and circumstances and tables as God ordains it, mended and healed and liberated for a love that is serving, that gives us back to one another, that knows who we are and remembers the one who lives in us. You see, love for the whole cosmos begins right here, in blood and in bodies, in that of our own and in that of every neighbor and stranger and friend and enemy, in the oxygen that is filling our lungs and pumping through our veins, in the simple fuel and sustenance, a morsel and a sip to remind us there is enough for everyone to have enough, in the tender washing of one another's hands, and then in the packing away of everything that we thought we needed to worship, the one who says, "Go ahead and set it all down. You are already enough. Now get up and go." Amen.